96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. You don't have to read a lot of headlines to know that young people are frequently behind a lot of the violence we see in our communities. Teens fighting on viral videos. Earlier this month, three pre-teenagers suspected in a breaking and entering and sexual assault in D.C., broad daylight gun battles, and of course, homicides. But what's behind these violent acts that young people are committing? What can be done to address it? What do we need to say to them to prevent them from making these life-altering decisions? Well, tonight my guests are Dr. Jeff Menzies, Doctor of Clinical Psychology and lead consultant of Mind on the Matter, and Waris Majid, community activist and executive director of the nonprofit Yay Me. Lines are open if you have a comment, if you have a question, at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Gentlemen, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the invitation.
Let me start with why these things seem to be the frequent activities of young people, Jeff. It is always disturbing, but we see so much of it now. We hear so much of it, and sometimes, you know, in our communities. What's behind this?
Part of it is that it might not necessarily be occurring more. In some cases, it may be, but it may also be more reporting, more accessibility, you know, to the inner workings of the streets. People got these pocket cameras now, you know, they got these pocket computers constantly recording and constantly uploading, even going live with fights and all of the other types of aggression. So, I mean, that's one aspect of it. But then there might actually be an increase in incidents and occurrence. And, you know, that could be blamed on many, many things. Social media influence, popular culture influence, you know, upbringing, environment. And we got to always remember that there's somebody that's going to benefit, you know, from the ills of the hood, so to speak.
What do you mean by that?
So, I mean, for example, you got privatization of prisons, and, you know, I always call popular culture hip hop is like a marketing tool for the prison industrial complex. You've got big business in prisons, and so they have to keep a certain number of beds filled. And so one way that you can guarantee that you got a steady population in your prisons is to influence what's going on the front lines in the streets. And you promote criminal behavior, you promote criminal attitudes, you promote criminalized personalities, and then those people develop in a criminalized way, and they're more likely to commit crimes and more likely to be incarcerated behind the behaviors.
So let me back up. So you're not, let me make sure I'm clear. You're not suggesting that hip hop is responsible for the violent and criminal activity of our youth, and that it is. You sound like you're talking about a conspiracy to keep, you know, youth in the prison system. And you're old enough to remember how hip hop started. That's not how hip hop started.
Yeah, it's interesting that you put it that way. But let me say this: I'm not saying that it's solely responsible, but I'm definitely saying that it has a role to play in the process. I remember when I was growing up, and why I did the things that I did is because my favorite rappers, that's what they said they did. I mean, I'm not going to go into the details because, of course, we live on air. But and the other part of it saying that it didn't look that way from the beginning. If I'm building a house right now and all I have is the blueprint laid out and you walk past me, you say, man, what's that right there? Oh, this is my house that I'm building. You're like, man, that ain't no house. That's a piece of paper. You come back in a month. I got a big old ditch dug and I'm pouring in the foundation. What's that? That's my house. It still doesn't look like what it's ultimately planned to become. And then you come back in about a year or so and I got this mansion sitting there. You say, what's this? Just the same house you saw on that piece of paper 2 years ago. And so things, they are sometimes started in one way with the end goal of being another way. And I'm the type that says, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I'm the type that recognizes that there are some people that conspire or plan for particular outcomes, especially when they're extremely profitable.
Waris, you dealt with young people here in the district. Have you had any conversations with them about violence? And if so, what have they said?
Well, not deal with.
Okay.
On a regular basis, basically, right? And yeah, we do have those conversations. And we talk about, you know, what is stemming the violence and, you know, what's going on. And just my perspective, honestly, this is, you know, today, one of the things that's really dominating the headlines is this coronavirus, right? But we forget it's a virus that's been going on in our community for years. So what we're starting to see now is when you don't treat that virus, those are these young people that you're starting to see. That's a lot of the senseless violence and craziness that we have going on in our community. It's a virus that we just didn't treat. And now it's spreading. It's spreading everywhere. So, of course, you can blame hip hop, you can blame the food, you can blame a whole bunch of different type of things. But at the end of the day, this is a virus that was put into our communities a long time ago that was never treated. And now you're starting to see the impact of that virus. And these young people, they don't even have the answers, because some of them are just mad to be mad. You know, some of them don't even understand. You know, you can't, at one point in time, we can even say that, hey, I heard that thing about the bull elephants. And there was this experiment where they took these men bull elephants, the male bull elephants, out of basically like a reservation in a sense, right? And what happened was the baby elephants, the young male elephants, they started doing things that elephants don't normally do. And then when they brought these bull elephants back, the male bull elephants back, the elephants got right back in line again, right? And basically, that's one of the things that happened in our community. And that's one of the things that really made these symptoms go crazy, because we didn't have the right doctors to treat a lot of these young people, because we took a lot of these bull elephants out. We put them in prison. A lot of them killed themselves off. There's a whole bunch of other things that we can get into. But those were symptoms that were happening a long time ago. And the main doctors in our communities, which are the bull elephants, they were taken out. And now you're starting to see what's happening right now. So everybody's sitting around saying, all these young people, they're going crazy and they're doing this. And yeah, Facebook and social media, and all this other type of stuff. No, this was a virus that we didn't treat. And that's what we're starting to see right now.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about young people and the commission of violent acts. What can be done to address it? If you have a comment or a question, give us a call again at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Is there, and maybe there is, and that is why we may not hear about as many incidents as there possibly could be. Talk to me a little bit about peer pressure, where you may have three guys or three, or, you know, or three young, you know, three girls, and one says, you know, let's steal this person's phone, and one, and the second one says, yeah, let's do that, and then the third one says, I don't think that's a good idea. Is that kind of thing happening less, more? Where is the, if I may, the moral authority in the peer pressure group?
Right. Yeah. So that peer pressure is a serious thing, man. And it always has been. And in a situation like that, children are less likely to be the one to go against the grain, especially if there's a potential negative consequence for going against the grain. And, you know, typically in a group of kids, most of the kids are good kids. You know, there might be a bad idea that circulates amongst them. And like my man was saying, you know, without that authority figure, that bull elephant, the OG, if you will, you know, who are many times locked down or either incarcerated or addicted at this point, because, you know, the crack epidemic wiped out a whole generation of male leadership, whether they were serving it and got locked up or smoking it and got rocked up. Either way it went, took them out of the picture. And so we have young children now who are relying on their own thinking processes. So the bad idea comes into the group. Two are with it. One might be against it. But the one that's against it is less likely to speak up and walk away from it, because there might be negative consequences for that, whether it's just being socially ostracized, being out of the group, being pushed out of the group, or literally violence. They might get beat down because now they're potentially a snitch because they didn't participate in the crime. So now they could tell and not face the same consequences. And so it's so many factors. And so what I do when I'm working with the youth is I try to teach them critical thinking skills, to where, how do you get out of a situation like that without seeming like you're going to be punking out or a snitch? And so sometimes I say, you find an adult that's respected and you blame that adult. You play it off. You pull your phone out your pocket, like, my mama hit me again, y'all, I got to go. And you slide out. They ain't going to talk bad about your mama, but if they do, they're going to mumble it, and it ain't going to be nothing against you. You know. So I just think it's an issue with the moral authority, moral compass might be there, but it's the executing of it in a strategic and a wise way that might be hindering the process.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about young people and violence. Why are they doing it? What is behind it? What can be done about it? Ms. Jones, calling from Silver Spring. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Oops. I'm sorry about that. There we go. Ms. Jones, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, good evening. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Go right ahead.
I am an educator of young children. I've been an educator for 37 years in Montgomery County. And one part of the problem with a lot of the violence that you're talking about with children and adults is because we have failed to give our children problem-solving skills as young people.
Who's we, Ms. Jones? Who is we?
A lot of teachers and parents, okay? Parents a lot of times don't realize that children at a young age can learn problem-solving skills more than just ABCs.
Ms. Jones, I think we're losing you.
Okay,
there you go. Go ahead. Finish your point, please.
Yeah, so I was saying teachers and parents alike, we're well-meaning, but a lot of times we don't add problem-solving skills to our developing our children as they're young people. Because when they get older, they don't know how to solve their problems in a peaceful way.
Hmm.
A lot of times it's violence that comes out with solving problems. But there are so many other skills that we can teach children at a very young age, even while they're playing, to help them with problem-solving foundations so when they get older, they don't have to resort to violence.
Okay. Thank you so much, Ms. Jones. About that worries, she talked about problem-solving. Can I just break it down and talk about something that's considerably more foundational to me than problem solving? I'm talking about the difference between right and wrong.
Okay.
Do we get to that first before we talk about problem solving, as opposed to, it is not good to knock somebody, in the head when you are in kindergarten. Okay, if you want to talk about, Ms. Jones is talking about teaching problem-solving skills in an early age, how about teaching what is right and wrong at an early age? Am I off base here?
No, you're actually on base. Actually, both of you all are, right? Because it is problem-solving, and it's also right and wrong. But guess what? Sometimes I think we take advantage of the fact that we learn these things, and these were things that were passed on to us by our mothers and fathers, grandmothers and grandfathers, and like the brother said, we really have to look at what that crack era really did to our communities, because it not only took the bulls out, but it infected a lot of our women who naturally had the responsibility to teach some of these things right and wrong. And problem solving was something actually that was learned in your house. You knew right from wrong, and you knew how to solve a problem at the same time. And one of the big things that you said, that you both said, was it happens at an early age. And it's crazy because a lot of the programs that we are associated with now, we work with older youth, 16 probably being the youngest youth, right? And what they do then is we try to put all of these problem-solving techniques into our curriculums and things instead of doing this stuff in elementary school. The way that we teach, the way that we educate our young people, we have to change that. It can't be the same because they're not getting that same dosage at home. So we have to take responsibility and making sure that this is a part of the educational process as well. Problem solving, right from wrong. Some of the basic things that we honestly took advantage of. We just got it. So we thought everybody has it. These young people don't have it. So you can't tell me I'm wrong if I don't know what right looks like.
Ooh, that's a word right there. Let me go back to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about young people and acts of violence, what's behind it. Bruce, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Bruce. What's on your mind?
I wanted to share that I disagree with the fact that it's problem-solving skills. I've been working with students for quite a number of years, and the problems that I see is the level of traumas that our children are coming to school with. We're not giving them not just problem-solving them any skills because we're not dealing with the traumas that they experience. I'm in a school system that has a large social emotional learning division, and we have licensed clinical social workers working along with the students. But some of the traumas that they experience at such a young age, the level of abuse, the level of neglect, there's physical abuse, there's sexual abuse, there's, you know, so many other things going on, and they bring this to the classroom. So I don't think it's really the problem-solving skills. I think we failed the students overall as a community in helping prevent these traumas from occurring within their lives.
So let me ask you about this, Bruce, and also Dr. Menzi. We may have to take a break. Trauma, abuse didn't just start 10 years ago. Right. Trauma and abuse by particularly black people in this country is as old as black people in this country. And so while I do not completely disagree, this level of violence and other kinds of activities by our youth didn't just start, Jeff. I keep hearing a lot of that, and I'm sure there is some kind of contribution to that.
Absolutely. And so what I would say is I want us to back out of this trauma versus problem solving, because traumatic experiences present problems to be solved and addressed. And so the trauma itself is a problem. And when a child reacts to traumatic, whether it's physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, verbal abuse, whatever it is, environmental abuse, whatever it is, they are presented with a problem and they're not prepared to address those problems. And so they address it to the best of their ability. In the house, the socialization is that this is how we address problems. We get physical. You spill some juice, I'm popping you in your mouth. Right. Even if a natural process like, you know, you soiled yourself, you peed on yourself in the bed, you getting a whooping behind that. They're being these violent acts are being modeled. And it's a transgenerational experience in the violence. Like my man said, this is something that's happening. So what the difference is, because it's not new, is the deterioration of the community. You don't have big mama there. You know, we got young grandmothers now. You know, you used to have grandmothers were elders at one point in time. You know, we had people who could talk to, other support systems. And now everything is in isolation almost. You got children as young as 2 years old looking at phones. You know, this is where they get their comfort from. And so, yeah, something happened. The male's authority figures, the OGs, were taken out of the community, out of the homes, or replaced with crack addicted OGs and males in the home. That right there leaves you more vulnerable to being abused. Uh-huh. And then it also leaves you one less person, adult, that cares for you to nurture you through that abuse.
Bruce, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about violence and our youth. What can be done about it? Wayne calling from D.C. Renee calling from Waldorf. You are next. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Angela Stribling is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This discussion continues on Sirius XM Channel 141 in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are unpacking the issue of violence and young people. What can be done to address it? Why is it happening? My guests are Dr. Jeff Menzies, Doctor of Clinical Psychology and Lead Consultant of Mind on the Matter, and Waris Majid, Community Activist and Executive Director of the nonprofit Yay Me. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jeff, you said something that made me, it took me back. It was such a simple example. You said, and this is one of those learning things that, I mean, it was such a perfect example. If a child, let's say a 10-year-old drops a glass and breaks it. The example that you used is that, you know, the mother or the father may pop the kid in the mouth. And I have said, when my daughter was little, when she has dropped a glass, the thing that I said to her was, are you okay? Did you cut yourself? No, but I broke the glass. It's just glass, baby.
Yep.
Let's just put your shoes on. Let's clean it up and keep it moving.
Yeah.
And I think, and even at 21, she was taking out the glass and taking out the trash at the house, and she pushed her hand through the glass in the storm door, mm-hmm. trying to open it instead of touching the metal part. Mm-hmm. And so she called me, and she was upset because she broke the glass on the storm door, because she's thinking, this is going to cost Dad money. Mm-hmm. My response again, are you hurt? Did right. you cut yourself? No. Okay, babe. Just stay away from the glass. I'll look at it when I get home. You can take the trash out. Be careful. And and when you're looking at it, whether you're talking to a 21-year-old or a 10-year-old, right. how you react to incidents can really have an impact on how young people receive information and how they act. I think that was such a great example.
Yeah, you know, how you judge a situation, it also impacts that. And what you were demonstrating is value of human life over material things. And that's a worldview piece. But at the same time, stress bypasses that. You know, if a person is stressed and already tense and on edge, the slightest thing is a reason to pop off, because they need to pop off anyway because they got so much building up in them. And so the child is not necessarily the source of their anger and their rage, but definitely is going to be the target. People oftentimes seek out safe targets, so to speak. You know, so that's why, you know, something jump off. Part of the reason, you know, we're looting our own neighborhoods is because we can't get to other places. But also we know that this is a relatively safe target to rob the corner store rather than going across town where we know they got that money for real. Because, mm-hmm. you know, the cops going to respond different over there because the rule is different like that.
Let me go back to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Wayne calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Wayne. What's on your mind?
This question goes to Walrice. Brother Walrice, I heard you all had a mentoring program. How could your mentoring program help our community?
That's an excellent question, Brother Wayne. So, number one, mentoring is one of those big pieces that we were talking about earlier, right? So if you don't have someone, well, let me put it like this. Our young people have plenty of examples. Just a lot of times those examples are not the right examples. So a positive mentor takes the place of a lot of these deficiencies that we see in our community. So our young people can have someone that they can look up to. They can have someone that can show them how to problem solve. They can have someone who's safe for them to talk to about the trauma and all the other things that are going on in the community. Because you're right, these things are happening at home, as the caller said earlier. But the thing is that when we came up, we had a responsible individual who we could talk to, who almost worked us through a lot of this stuff. So even though we weren't getting therapy in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, we actually were. We just got it at the dinner table. We got it from our coaches. You know, we got it from our teachers. So when mentors left and the community leaders left, we have this void that needs to be filled. That's why mentoring programs are so important, and making sure we have the right type of mentors, males and females, to really pour into these communities, because that's really what's going to stop a lot of this senseless like killings and a lot of the senseless crimes that are happening. Our young people don't have targets of positive and strong brothers and sisters that they can see. So the targets they throwing at are those rappers who are lying most of the time, or the young lady who's saying all these other things about herself and her body and what they're supposed to be doing. That our examples are horrible at this point in time. So until we change that with some positive mentors, because our young people want to do great. And they're goal-oriented. That's another thing that we don't understand. They have great goals. It's just unfortunate their goals right now are getting high, you know, learning about the newest gun, learning about the newest this. It's a lot of garbage. But when we change that, because they've reached their goals, It says their goals are not the goals that we would want for them if they were our children. So we set new goals. They will shoot for those new goals because their mentors will give them those new goals. And that's how we got to start thinking about this thing.
Yeah, Jay-Z said it in on American Dreamin'. He said, nothing wrong with the aim, just got to change the target. Because we hit exactly what we're shooting at every time.
That's what we do.
They just gave us some other targets, though.
There you go. There you go.
Wayne, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Renee calling from Waldorf. Thanks for calling, Renee. What's on your mind?
Thank you. I can't, I just want to commend all of your panel on the work that they're trying to do. And I don't know what to say because when you talk about mentors, how do you appeal to the people who, the doctors, the lawyers, whoever, that could be, but feel like, hey, you know, I've made it, I've arrived, and I want to take care of my family, and I want to go back to my home in the suburbs, and they don't feel any, I guess, loyalty, if you will, to the black youth?
Well, this is the easiest way to tell them this. Mm-hmm. And I say this to my class, and I also say this to my staff. You can handle the problem right now, or the problem's going to knock on your door in 20 years and ask for your son or your daughter's hand. So that's kind of the way that I look at that. So we have to understand that if we don't address these issues right now, the issue is always going to be there. Just unfortunately, your daughter or your son is going to want to date the issue that you didn't address when you had the opportunity 20 years from now. So, or should I say 20 years ago? So that's kind of how I look at that. We have to understand that everyone in our community, all these communities are connected. And somehow that did happen. That happened to D.C., you know, and especially in the 80s and the 90s. A lot of our, especially African-Americans, as we got a little bit of change in our pocket, a lot of us moved out. And that's why it's a big void that was filled in D.C. And out of that 10 families, maybe two or three of them were really struggling. But you had seven or eight that were doing well. And the better they did, those seven or eight, they moved out. So now seven or eight families came back. But those seven or eight families were also struggling. And that plays a big, big part on what's going on specifically in wards 5, 6, 7, and 8 in the District of Columbia.
But let me also say two things. First of all, it is difficult to pass judgment on the success of African American families, okay? Because you cannot, and for those who moved out into the quote unquote land of milk and honey after the riots of 1968. Uh-huh. Into the Prince George's counties and into the Charles counties and Montgomery County and even Northern Virginia. So I think it would be you would do a disservice to that. Also to the point that Renee is making, and you can ask and Jeff, you can tell me what you think about this. Often I would also believe that sometimes charity begins at home. So does discipline and the development of moral compasses. And I think to your point, it doesn't matter what asks your son or your daughter's hand in marriage or dating. If you give them the right tools, they will not take that hand. Am I too far off here?
No, I definitely hear what you're saying. At the same time, I think it's easy to stand back from afar and think that somebody's not doing something.
Right.
Because they moved away. I tell my folks all the time, nobody in the hood wants to be in the quote unquote hood, meaning nobody that's suffering wants to be suffering. We've normalized it. We've gotten used to it because that's survival. But everybody that's doing bad would rather be doing better. And so what happens is that we draw a further divide with those who are successful. I know plenty of people who came out the hood to give back to the hood regularly. Doctors, lawyers, attorneys, officers, all type of people are giving back in the way that they can. Now, there are those who dip, the black flight. You got those folks that don't want to associate, don't hardly communicate with their family that might still be hood. Right. And so those things are real at the same time. But I think that what happens is that what I do is I encourage everybody to give back in the way that you can, in the way that you can. And so we have people who are going to go back and be frontline soldiers. But then we can't trip and act like people who try to stay in the hood after being successful don't get hit. Some folks get jacked. Some folks get beat down because they're considered to be a sellout. Why? Because they moved on and become something different than what they used to be. And that's one of the things. It's very hard to be around those that knew you before you transformed. and still maintain, you know, your growth and development without people thinking that you feel like you're better than people. And so, I mean, it's such a dynamic situation that we're looking at here. I mean, it's just what it is. So it's not as simple as saying that people move away and don't look back and don't give back, because it's all kind of people that do. And it's people who try and they get jacked for it or they get negative experiences. People that do it successfully. So there's so many different ways to look at this, and it's real.
Yeah, I agree. If I could just add to that point right there, so I'm going to be very clear. This is what I'm saying. A lot of times in our communities, those positive examples that we have, right, and a lot of times the ones that we've elevated to get to that point, right, that part of Black flight is what I'm talking about, yep. Right? So when I look around and I don't see any men who go to work every day, I don't see any women who are in the PTA every day, because the brothers and sisters that are left, they are struggling so much with day to day that these things, these are not the examples that I see. But that guy who's down the street who got up every day and went to work and did what he's supposed to do,
right.
He's gone.
Right.
The mother who's at the PTA every day, she's gone. Right. This is what I'm talking about.
Right.
So when we look around, when we talk about the hood or whatever, I'm saying the hood, we can make the hood a lot better.
That's right.
So we start calling the neighborhood.
That's right. Put neighbor back on that.
We haven't been doing that.
And right. Suffice it to say that when we talk about the quote unquote hood, we're not always necessarily talking about, you know, urban centers. Sometimes we're talking about a mindset, because a lot of times, you know, these acts of violence are not just happening, you know, quote unquote, east of the river. These mm-hmm. things are happening way out in Prince William County. Mm-hmm. These things are happening in, you know, in suburban Atlanta. These things are happening in suburban Columbus, Ohio. Yeah. And so even though we may talk about certain aspects that are right here in front of us in the DMV, this is not a DMV issue.
Right.
This is a quote-unquote community, national community-wide issue. Renee, thank you so much for contributing to the conversation. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, Keith. Calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
How you doing, sir? Sir, my name is Keith Hughes. I grew up in the city of Baltimore. Really rough growing up. I'm 53 years old now, so early 70s around that time when I grew up. Life was pretty tough in the city, but one thing I can say, I had two parents that really kept me in line. They had no problem with the discipline aspect, and I see we're moving away from that now. I think we're living in an age now that parents that want to discipline their children, they're looked down as abusers when they discipline their children. And I think a lot of parents are afraid to discipline their children, and the children know. And so they're just buck wild, because they know that their parents are not going to check them.
That's a really interesting point, Keith. What is your thought on addressing issues of discipline worries, or as some may say, corrective action?
Well, yeah.
I was asking my panel, but go ahead, worries, your thought.
Well, I mean, listen, for my own kids, nieces, nephews, I mean, I do believe in a certain amount of discipline, right? But let me tell you, though, I've actually started to change the way I think about that now, right? And I'm more of the type of parent that actually explains what's going on. So I want to kind of get into their head. Like, can you make a better decision? Like, was that a good decision that you made? And I'm fortunate, because I work with about 100 men every year, right? And that age range of 20 to 35, and these guys have been, you know, quote unquote, been called all of these different titles that I don't even want to say on the show right now. So I have to do the same thing with them. So it's discipline. Even though they have men, you say, oh, they're 20. No, a lot of them, their mindset is still caught up in that 10, 11, 12, where they weren't able to be disciplined and things like that. So I have to learn how to discipline these guys, but it's a whole different way.
So how do you do that?
Talking with them. Giving them options, right? The main thing is showing them what love really, really looks like. Because one thing that I realized personally was from my father, who was the disciplinary, he had the razor strap. Remember the razor strap? Mm-hmm. That's what we got, right? But I never forget my mother. When she told me, I'm disappointed in you, or I didn't raise you to be a bum, or things like those things resonated with me a lot more than that whooping. That whooping went away. I still can remember to this day, if I want to do something bad, thinking, oh, I can't hurt my mother. those feelings. Just that's how I try to discipline my kids at the same time. Just letting them know, like, these are things that are important. You know, this is what's important. These are great decisions that you can make and how they impact other people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that's what I try to do with the men that I work with. That's what I try to do with the kids in the community or anyone that I come in contact with.
Keith, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Kim calling from D.C. Kim, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Carl, I was D.C. I'm a D.C. resident, and I was law enforcement for 28 years.
Mm.
And I think the surprising thing, and it's been interesting to me as to why so much violence is going on, and I go back to when I came on. When I came on, there were so many programs for the youth.
Mm.
When we were police officers, we knew our community. We had community outreach, community resource officers who knew every child in that district in these communities who were, you know, less fortunate, you know, some with two parent homes. And then, two, I look at, and I've been sitting on some boards in D.C., and I'm not blaming educators, because I do think it takes a village to make the world a better place. And we're losing that as a society. I look at the school system, and my children are in a two-parent home. And my son was abused in the school.
Hmm.
And the abuse that I see these children go through, not only at home, so can you imagine a child being at home? And then they get to school, and a teacher's talking down to them
right.
as early as 3 years old.
Right.
So this cycle of abuse is coming from so many places today that it breaks my heart when I see some of these children. And I caution parents a lot, too, when they say, well, my child, you know what? We have got to get away from my child. I'm not telling you to take on responsibility of other children, but we got to stop turning a blind eye. And I feel like we turn a blind eye. And when you see these poor babies getting, you know, mad. And when my son hit the child, he didn't have a way to defend himself. He was 8 years old. Now he's getting older, and he's taller, he's bigger. So he feels like, oh, I can carry out this anger. And I had to explain to him, no, this is not how you, you know, show how you feel or what took place with you by an adult when you was a defenseless being. Most poor children don't have parents or anybody in their society or in their neighborhood that can teach them that. And then I take away, and D.C. makes me angry because I look at the school system, it's so broken. And then you don't have vocational schools for these kids.
Well, let me interrupt you just for a moment, Kim, because I think you made several, critical points. And I think that when you talk about whether it's programs, mentoring, or even the subtle input of a respected, responsible adult in the community. And because, you know, sometimes you don't, if you do it at the right time, a teachable moment. I mean, something so simple as, a kid walking a dog, and then the kid gets angry at the dog and kicks the dog, and a person, you know, who happens to be sitting on the front step says, "Boy, don't kick that dog." And if it's done at the right time and at the right place, that again goes back to the foundations of what is right and what is wrong, because this is a living thing that you are harming just because the dog peed on the grass.
Right.
And I think that as Kim is saying, you know, when we get to the point about programs, that's almost a stopgap measure to repair the things that were broken when we as a community should have been there.
Yeah. Frederick Douglass said it best, right? It's a lot easier to work with the children than to repair broken men.
That's right.
And that's exactly what we are doing right now. Let me tell you something. The District of Columbia alone, and I know this is a national problem, but the District of Columbia is more saturated with programming than anywhere in the United States. And I've been to almost every neighborhood and community in the United States that has this problem, right? So that's not the issue right there. Mm-hmm. You know, the problem is the money's going in the wrong places a lot of times, and we need to start directing our attention, our money, our mentors, all of these things when these kids are in school. It's a lot of, and we have to change the way we educate the kids. We have to change that system. You know, a lot of times, and we work in a lot of these schools, the teachers can't educate because of what's going on in the classroom. The kids, they can't focus because of what's going on outside of the classroom. So it's a lot of things that we got to do. This is not a cookie cutter type of solution to this problem. It's a lot of things that we got to do, but we have to definitely start by going into these elementary schools and retraining the teachers, retraining the staff. I mean, it goes all the way down to even the community officers that are greeting the kids when they're coming in.
Right.
I mean, I've seen some really crazy things. So we need to restart re-educating all of our educators. We need to start re-educating all of our parents. And that's where you're going to start to see this problem, this virus, start to clear up a little bit.
I read a meme earlier today. It said an escalated adult cannot de-escalate an escalated child. And that goes across the board. It goes to what Kim is saying. A caller, she says, you know, about the policing. There was one point in time where the police were part of the community. They actually had, they lived where they served. And so they were a neighbor in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, you got people transferring from other places to become officers in a foreign city. And we don't know what their past record was. And now, as we know in recent times, officers can be reprimanded for some type of excessive force in one district, move to a whole nother place and get a job with a clean slate. And they come there and they continue their abuses. And so, you know, when you have somebody who looks down on the community, if you have somebody who looks down on the children or feel that the children in that space are innately violent or less than human, you know, if it's a racist individual, racist officer in the black community, you know, you're begging for trouble. And so this thing of violence is systematic. There are many levels to the game. And we have our best approach is to address every level possible. There was a guy who was a professor up at Towson University. He wrote an opinion piece in the Baltimore Sun. And he, you know, talking about he blames Baltimore's violence on single parent households. And I'm like, single parent houses, Baltimore? And when you got excessive lead in the environment that we know contributes to behavior issues, when you've got heroin on one side, crack on the other side, when you got such a deep legacy of redlining, meaning housing injustice, when you got such a deep legacy of enslavement in this town, and you're going to say single parent households, you're going to jump over all of that and blame it on the sisters that's raising these babies.
You know, one of the things that happened last year, and it was a topic of discussion in our newsroom. This was last summer, where the 18-year-old who was shot, and it was I think it was near Stanton Road, but there was a 13-year-old who was wounded, and there was an interview with I think it was either the mother or a woman who was part of the community where this happened. And this was one of the most disturbing things. There's another discussion about how news organizations use interviews, and that's a completely different discussion. But one of the things that the woman said was, after the incident, she made the comment, and I'm paraphrasing, but she said, you know, you need to be careful where you're shooting. You should hit the target that you're aiming at, which to me is a normalization of violence in the community that is breathtaking.
Mm-hmm.
Not that a life was lost,
right,
that a young person, that a 13-year-old was wounded, not that bullets are flying where innocents are walking around living their lives and doing what they were supposed to do, but to say you got to hit what you're shooting at in a community. That kind of normalization of violence just bothers
me. I can understand her. You know,
I understand the flaw in it.
But at the same, we're talking about discipline again. Because what you have in certain communities, you got folks who have been trained to use guns from a small, young age through hunting. And so they understand, they respect the weaponry. They respect the gun.
But you're not hunting on Stanton Road.
But they are. But they are.
Well, yeah, exactly. When I say hunting,
right,
I'm talking
deer,
about
rabbit, squirrel.
Yeah, deer, rabbit, squirrels. I'm not talking for other human beings.
Yeah.
And that's a normalization of violence that I'm talking about.
I even take it another level, right? Because I call it UPTSD. Mm. It's urban post-traumatic stress disorder. For a mother to even say something like that and be comfortable, right? That is the type of stress. stress that these communities are under. Yeah,
but again, it makes sense, though. It's like, look, if you
because it is what has been learned.
No. I mean, because it's the reality.
Yes.
She's saying that if you can aim better, you would at least only hit the person that you're shooting at. Because what she's also understanding and has accepted, and it's reality, is that she's not going to stop them from shooting because the shooting is taking place for a reason. So she's saying, look, man, go to the range. Learn how to use this. And a part of that is also developing discipline, right? It's developing, when you have disciplined people, you have less mistakes being made.
But I think, but the point that I'm making also is that this was a young mother, mm-hmm. and which goes back to how thoughts about violence or attitudes about violence in a community. She didn't just develop that
right.
week.
No, absolutely
this
not.
This was something that happened probably, as you said, is something that she learned from the environment, probably as a youth, seeing yeah. other youth. Which,
she accepted the harsh reality.
Which goes back to how do we address these issues in our own communities.
And so check this out just real quick. What I understand is that by introducing discipline and introducing training, or your weaponry training, mm-hmm. I'm saying, like, if you took the brothers in the hood right now that are just waywardly shooting and you put them through a concealed carry course where they have to learn gun responsibility, it is demonstrated that they are less likely to use it as recklessly, not meaning that they're just going to hit their target, but they will be less likely to even draw down.
But hold on. The youth that we're talking about are not even legally able to own
guns. That's
what
I understand. I've seen kids as young as 10 years old.
Whether it's in D.C. or wherever they may
be. I've seen kids as young as 10 years old at the gun show. And when a little kid, typically a white kid that young at the gun show, would pick up the gun, and I could tell they've been trained how to handle it because their finger is not on the trigger. It's extended along the side. That's a sure tell. And what I'm saying is that discipline, learning more, respecting this gun, it translates into more responsible behavior. I know it seems to be counterintuitive, but it works. It's just like you teach a kid martial arts and learn how to fight for real, they're less likely to engage in fights after that.
Because they know that they can hurt someone. And yeah. Okay.
I see where he's going. I would go and say that that's more about those coping skills that they had, though, mm-hmm. right? Because anger, you know, if you don't know how to cope with anger, and the tool that I have to cope with it is a pistol, mm-hmm. then that's what I'm using.
Yep.
So it got to kind of go to that. We got to kind of think about that as well. So when in that retraining process, because you're talking about that, that's vicious.
It's legit.
That's a whole nother level right there. That's a whole nother conversation. But I think it's also just the fact that our young people don't have positive coping skills. Mm-hmm. So that violence, because it could be a gun, it could be a bat, it could be a knife.
It could be no hands.
You know, it could be whatever it is.
A bottle.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. But at the time, that is the tool that they have to be able to use. Right?
So think about it like this. It's like almost mentorship, if you will, because mm-hmm. you've got somebody who's an expert at firearms teaching you and training you. So that's trusting you enough to teach you, caring about you enough to teach you how to handle this deadly tool. It's deep, man. But
and certainly in the case of youth violence, we need to instill discipline and training between the ears mm-hmm. and in the souls and spirits of these young people. Kim, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it. Also, I want to thank my guests, Dr. Jeff Menzies and Waris Majeed. Thank you both for coming.
It's a pleasure,
I appreciate
it. Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, March 11th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for The Connection.